We have a quorum, Trustee Ribeiro, Trustee McDermott, Trustee Cannon, and I think Vincent's iPhone is Trustee Morrow, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Trustee Morrow present, and I am as well. Let's skip over item one for now and go to item two, approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from August 25th, 2022?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Morrow made the motion. Trustee McDermott seconded. Any discussion on approval of the minutes? Any discussion? All those in favor, Trustee Morrow?
Aye.
Trustee McDermott?
Aye.
Trustee Cannon?
Aye.
Trustee Ribeiro?
Aye.
And I am an aye as well. That item passes. Item three, so we have a lot of things to cover here. Administrative matters, A, BSW report on monthly billings for the period of July 2015 to June 2022. I don't know if this is Leanna that you want to start or Carolyn Cohen.
I'll start if that's okay. Okay. At the last meeting, the trustees requested that we do a monthly report of our billings for the last 7 years. And that's what this report is. And just for the sake maybe of Trustee Morrow, who's the only new member, we'll call him a new member. Our firm, as I said last time, has been counsel for the PNF fund for over 40 years. But prior to July 2020, we never had a contract, and we just billed at the rates that were approved by the board. So until July 2020, the rate was $280 an hour for attorney time, and I guess $100 an hour for paralegal time. That changed in July 2020 to $300 an hour for attorney time. And then this past year, the July 2021 year, we went to a flat rate of $6,000 a month. So that's the only period of time that's covered by a flat rate, but we do keep track of what our actual billings are. So I don't know if anybody had any questions on this report, but you can see what the yearly totals were and then what the yearly totals would have been if the rate had been what it currently is.
Thank you, Attorney Cohen. Any discussion or questions on the research and documentation provided? I know there's a lot of interest from trustees on this question. Any questions on the billing history?
This is Trustee Ribeiro.
Trustee Ribeiro.
Just a question. Just procedurally, just because I just can't remember, did we vote last month to go to the flat fee just pending further review and that we would?
Yes.
If we had 6 months, okay.
No, but we said in December we would revisit the issue. So it will be on the December agenda, whether to continue with the flat fee. And at that time, I'll just bring this report up to date and show the period of July 2022 through November 2022 so you can see what's going on this year. But
okay, I'm good for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Ribeiro. Any other questions? Okay, let's move on to item B. Discussion regarding amending a policy to create a time limit for a member who sustains an injury after application for an age retirement, but before the retirement begins to apply for disability benefits. And this item, as you'll recall, has been tabled. Is there a motion to take the item off the table?
Trustee Ribeiro, so move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Morrow beat you to it. Trustee McDermott, all those in favor of taking the item off the table, Trustee Ribeiro. Trustee Rubin.
Aye.
Thank you.
Sorry, I was on mute.
Trustee Morrow.
Aye.
Trustee McDermott.
Aye.
Trustee Cannon.
No.
And I am an aye. So the item's off the table. Discussion on this item.
So if I could just bring everybody up to date, or sure. Nothing has happened really in the last month, but this item in 1999, this board adopted a policy, which is in your materials, which says that at the time you apply for an age annuity, if you're planning to apply for disability benefits, you have to make applications at the same time. There's an exception, and that would be for employee who was hurt between the time they made the application and their age retirement date. And that person, this policy provides, would be considered their age application would be considered a disability application. So we had somebody come in who had, in 2022, who had been injured in 2014 and said that he fit within this category. He had been hurt after his age application, but before his retirement date. And this policy, any change would not apply to that person, but it gave us pause to look at the policy. And so the question was raised whether or not this had to be collectively bargained. I communicated by email with the Office of Labor Relations. They said, yes, it has to be collectively bargained. They didn't want to separately bargain it from the bargaining that was going on with the police union. But they did request some guidance from this board as to what, if there were to be a limit, what that limit should be. So should it be, okay, the policy would apply, but you have to come back within a year and let us know that you were hurt between the time of your application and your retirement date. So this it would just be to give the Office of Labor Relations guidance for when they negotiate. But yeah.
And Attorney Cohn, can you remind us, because we had a lengthy discussion about this, you had drafted a suggestion of a time limit.
And I don't think a year is what I had put, because I had thought maybe that's what the board wanted, but I'm uncomfortable saying that's what the board wanted without knowing. So
thoughts from the trustees about a recommendation to provide to the city's labor relations office? Trustee Cannon.
Just to continue to file collective bargaining, that's all my concern is.
Understood. It sounds like that's the request of labor relations, and unless the trustees disagree, that seems like a reasonable request. But they're asking for guidance from us about what to bargain for?
I'm looking at, I agree with if the time frame between a member who retires and an injury that is sustained, basically that injury carries forward.
But the question on the table is whether or not to submit or to ask labor relations to negotiate for a time limit under which that employee after they retire can apply.
I understand that. I believe between the timeline of the injury till it's determined by the doctors, there is a long process sometimes before they're eligible to totally clear the member to come back or not to come back. And that sometimes, unfortunately, does go beyond a year.
But this is after the member's retired.
Yeah, this is just somebody saying, oh, I want my age application to be considered a disability application.
I apologize. I thought the original claim was after they, in between the time they apply and an injury sustained. Is that not correct?
So, well, I'm not quite sure of the question, but this is, okay, I apply for age. I get hurt before my retirement date. I want my age application to be considered a disability application. This person came back, 7 years later and said that? when that happened, we said, really, should there be a time limit for when the person says, oh, I want my age application to be considered a disability application? You know, if the trustees feel there shouldn't be a time limit and just keep going as we are, then I would just tell labor relations not to try to add that to the negotiations.
Unfortunately, in the line of police and fire, we do just sustain injuries that unfortunately they not only are at the moment of the injury, but they continue on for life, unfortunately, or they're determined later whether they're going to be life altering. So I would keep it open if that's
as is.
So Trustee Cannon has given his assessment here. It does create some risk for the pension fund because we don't have an idea of who might come in later. And well, I guess it does. It's only tax related. Is that right?
Correct. It does affect the fund. You're right.
Well, I ask Attorney Cohen.
That's right. I mean, the issue is whether or not, you know, the medical record, if we have to determine that something happened many, many years ago, you know, is that a difficult medical determination?
Mm-hmm. Well, my only concern is, I mean, it is documented. If an injury is documented, it's not something that comes up later. If the injury is documented job is my concern. I am not open up. I'm not opening up to anybody that's coming afterwards. I meant an injury that sustained on the job that's documented from workman's comp and through medical records of an individual that on the job while they're active. This is not something that comes. I'm not trying to propose somebody can present later on in life an injury. No, this is an active duty injury that is resulted years later to determine that member is actually disabled to that injury. And it does not affect the outcome of the fund in the ADEC or ARC. This is not something that they're going to get more money from the fund. This is just a tax designation. If that injury is related to the job and designated while that member is on the job, it's not an injury that just comes up later out of nowhere. This is an injury that's related to the job, and it does unfortunately progress the injury to the point that member is disabled. That's something we want to consider. We're not trying to take any more money from anyone, the fund, the city, anything like that. This is just an injury that has unfortunately developed and continued to develop to the point that member is disabled due to an injury that actively happened. Correct?
Other comments from the trustees?
The only thing I'd like to bring up is, you know, in my time on this board, I can't really recall another incident where the board has been asked to make recommendations for something to be negotiated in a contract. So I feel like that's kind of out of the realm of how we normally operate.
We've done that, though. Where we, you know, we certainly did it with SURF, where we got the disability benefits. We got the IRS to say those could be tax-free like they are for PNF. And then we had to go to labor relations and get that negotiated in every contract. There's another item, I just can't remember where we've done that. But in the past, labor relations has not been as adamant that items need to be negotiated as they, you know, that we have usually been able to change our policies as we see fit.
Any other questions from the trustees or comments on this item? There was a lot of discussion last time, and I thought we were landing on a consensus of a time limit. It sounds like there's a little bit of a change of heart here.
I agree with Trustee Cannon on the interpretation here.
Okay. Any other discussion?
Thank you. I appreciate the guidance.
Okay. Yeah, it doesn't seem like we need a vote here. We just move on, correct?
Yep.
Moving on to item C, seeing no other questions or comments on this item. Discussion on an RFP for legal services. I see Michael Gormany here. Mr. Gormany?
Yeah, thank you, Trustee Ellicker. This is just to revisit the item of the RFP for legal services. I just need to know the trustee's pleasure. I sent a few emails, but did not see response on the actual RFP document itself back in June and July. So to give a little bit of a timeline, if the trustees are okay with the document to be advertised as I sent it a few months ago, then we would advertise it in October. For October and November, get the responses back, forward them to the trustees to schedule interviews. Based on the respondents, the anticipated timeline is, I understand vacation schedules in December, so we would try to work around that for December and January and hope to have a vote on an award. If it's not the incumbent for legal services, by February. But again, what I wanted to kind of get from this board is the okay to advertise the RFP as I sent it.
Thank you, Mr. Gormany. So a lot of interest by some of the trustees in moving this process along. Mr. Gormany's reached out with any feedback on the proposed RFP. And ideally, we give him the green light to move forward with the process because these things take time. Are there any questions from the trustees on the RFP or comments on any proposed changes to the RFP?
I did have the opportunity to read it. Mike, I'm sorry I didn't reply to the email. I did read it over. From my perspective, it looks good to send out. I don't have any objection to that whatsoever.
Thank you, Trustee McDermott. Other trustees, any comments here?
One other comment, Mayor, sorry. The only trustee that did not see the RFP, which I can forward to him today, which I just realized was Trustee Morrow, because the emails went out prior to his arrival on the pension board.
Okay.
I can touch base with him this week on if he has any questions on.
Okay. Any other?
I have no questions.
Go ahead, Trustee Vereen. Good to see you.
I have no questions in him moving forward.
Thank you. And for the record, we've been joined by Trustee Vereen. I'm sorry, I didn't notice earlier. Any other comments? So, Mr. Gormany, if I just suggest maybe you connect with Trustee Morrow, give him an opportunity to evaluate it, and then if he doesn't have any major issues or anything like that, then it sounds like the trustees are okay with you moving forward with posting the RFP.
Mike, you can give me a call this morning. It won't take long.
All right. Absolutely. I will have Taylor actually email you the document during this meeting.
Okay.
Thank you.
From a procedural perspective, we do not need to vote to approve Mr. Gormany moving forward with the RFP, correct?
I mean, you can. It's probably best to. I think it's a good idea.
That's fine if there's a motion.
I'll make the motion to approve Mr. Gormany sending out the RFP, putting it out for the public.
Is there a second?
I second the motion.
Trustee McDermott made the motion and Trustee Vereen seconded the motion. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, Trustee McDermott?
Aye.
Trustee Vereen?
Aye.
Trustee Morrow?
Aye.
Oh, I'm sorry, Trustee Morrow, you cut out. Trustee Morrow?
Aye.
Trustee Cannon?
Aye.
Trustee Ribeiro?
Aye.
And I'm an aye, so that item passes. Thanks, Mr. Gormany. Moving on to item 3D, discussion on Hooker and Holcomb portal for active employees.
Good afternoon. Do you want to take it, Leanna? I'll take it, Leanna. So this has been an issue in data sharing with Hooker and Holcomb. This has been really on the city's IT side. So we do apologize. We understand that this has caused some delays. Not making any excuses, but we are down about 7 IT positions. So this has been made a top priority. Unfortunately, the person who did this retired from the IT office, and we are currently working on the information that Hooker and Holcomb needs. We received the email as early as this morning as far as what information we can send to Hooker and Holcomb to have the portal set up. So again, this was really just this was something on the IT side that we are currently correcting as far as the information that needs to be presented to Hooker and Holcomb to update the portal. So again, we do apologize for the delay in information.
Thank you, Mr. Gorman. I think that everyone can understand, given the staffing shortages, not in the city, but all over the place, that it's challenging, but appreciate you working through it. Are there any questions for Mr. Gormany, or I see David here from Hooker and Holcomb?
I've got a few things.
I see Trustee McDermott. Go ahead.
Yeah, a few things to bring up. I mean, you know, I understand the short staffing. I think anybody who works for any part of the city is we're all in the same boat with this. You know, running on skeleton crews here. But these issues were present, you know, right from the rollout of this program, where the data was just, you know, was not up to date. But in some cases, it was giving, you know, some of the people accessing it inaccurate numbers, not up to date numbers. President Cotto and I have both received, less than stellar reviews about the portal from our membership. And in addition, once the portal was rolled out, we found something that wasn't really discussed much when this was presented to us, is the fact that, you know, we have to go and request a username and a password from the pension office. Again, another part of the city that's, you know, overworked, understaffed, and to have to, you know, reach out to them, wait for a return phone call. This was kind of pitched to us at the time as something that, you know, if you're sitting at home in the evening and you're trying to plan out, the next step after you retire, talking about it with a spouse or other family members, that you could just log onto your computer, pull it up and get a ballpark number. And that's, I think, one of the reasons that I know that I was interested in moving this forward. I can't necessarily speak for Trustee Cannon, but just the idea that the employees would be able to really kind of get a feel for what they were looking at and plan the next step of their life after their service to the city is completed. You can't just do that. It's not that simple. It's not that easy. You have to kind of, almost put in an application to be able to get onto the portal in the first place. And then once you do, you're dealing with outdated data. So, you know, you're not even getting an accurate picture in the first place. Overall, I just feel like it's fallen way short of what was pitched to us. And, you know, this is something that we're paying for. If I had to rate it right now, based on what the NHPD users think of it right now, I would say it's, overall across the board, it's a disappointment to the point where, if we had to vote again now, to continue paying for this service, I would probably say no.
Thanks, Trustee McDermott. I see Leanna having a comment.
Hi, I'd like to just add on to that. Trustee McDermott, actually, whatever complaints your police department is having has not been brought to our attention, so I apologize. As far as information on the portal goes, it came about a year ago. And since then, the portal is up to date. We get the figures right after normally the fiscal year. So within the last year or so, it was up to date. Anytime somebody goes to actually retire, obviously our staff sends to the actuary, you know, the most recent information, their most recent payroll periods. But otherwise, the portal is pretty accurate. It also gives future estimations. It's able to calculate future estimations based on if the person wants to put in a potential percentage of a raise increase, for an example. As far as people setting up an account, every single employee was mailed a letter to their home address. This was back in March, right before the portal went live. And that is the letter that gave everyone information as to how to create their account, which honestly takes less than 3 minutes. It gives step-by-step, go to this website, choose a username, choose a personal email, choose a password, and then they're in. People who didn't do it right away, lost that letter, forgot how to log in, those are the people that can, yes, contact my office. And what we do is we send them that exact letter. It's safe to say anyone who contacts my office with that request gets their letter, if not within an hour, a couple hours before the end of the day. So they can also contact Hooker and Holcomb directly for that letter. But everyone was given that letter. And if they do need a second copy, it's not an issue for my staff to get it to them. So I'm not quite sure where that problem lies of people.
Could we get that letter to the respective unions in the form of an email? It's a lot easier to save an email file than to archive.
It's individualized for each person because each person has their own code to get into it. So the actual person would need their actual letter so that anyone else cannot activate or get into their account.
Yeah, it might be that if there are that many people that do not have their password and username, that the union could email the employees saying, if you have lost this, you can contact the pension office and they can provide an updated username and password. Just a general information, but not the specific letter.
Okay. And just, you know, for the record, I haven't obviously put in for, you know, for retirement myself. So I'm hearing this anecdotally from our members, but I've been hearing that members have been told that the updates for numbers recently wouldn't be available till the end of this month. That's something we can have an offline discussion about as far as, you know, the availability. And I'm not looking to get into an argument over what they're telling me is right or wrong or what's the case here. I'm just feeding back. I haven't gone through it personally, but this is the feedback that I'm receiving.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what Mike was just talking about. Last year the information was provided, I think, like the end of July, right after the fiscal year closed. And, you know, the actuary needs a few weeks to actually get it into the portal accurately. So last year it was ready like first week of September. And as Mike stated, as of yet, the actuary has not received that file from IT. So that is why the portal has not been updated. However, the portal, everything else on the portal is updated. It's just the most recent fiscal year that just ended is the one that is not 100% accurate. I do have David from Hooker and Holcomb here on the call in case there was anything that he needed to touch on specifically, but that is what we're holding up and waiting on is, you know, that information from IT so that Hooker and Holcomb can update the most recent fiscal year.
Thank you.
Okay. I would like, you suggested that we could send out another round of letters. I would like to request that for my union. I'm sure that the fire union would benefit from that as well. One thing I can't ask because it's not really feasible to send this out through an email. It does need to be a paper letter. If you could give me a heads up when those letters are about to go out. So perhaps we can send out an email from the union to all the members to let them know that this is going to be coming in the mail. With the transition in the past 20 years toward email, what's in people's mailboxes is become more and more overrun with junk mail. And I think where it's probably not the best idea, I think a lot of our members, if it's not something that they're looking for and it's, and it, expecting in the mailbox, it probably falls by the wayside for a lot of people. So at least if we have the opportunity to give people a heads up that it's coming and saying, look for this, don't lose it, save this document. I think that would really increase our chances of people actually doing what they're supposed to do with that letter when they receive it.
Just before you respond, Leanna, how many concerns or, you know, people not being able to log in the portal from the police department do you regularly hear?
It's hard for me to put a gauge on it. I could probably tell you after discussing this with my, with my union board, because sometimes when we all get together, you know, at a union meeting, well, you know, two or three people have come to me with this. Another half dozen have come to our union president with it. We have other, you know, executive board members that people come to with issues. And sometimes we realize that something is an issue when we all get together and, you know, and tally up the number and say, wow, you know, two or three people to each one of us starts to add up. I'm not sure that that's the case here. I know typically if I'm hearing it from, you know, from even two or three people, that it could definitely represent a larger number. Sometimes when I get together with the union board, we find out that it's the same people who are complaining to each of us, and it's not as big as we thought. But it's definitely something that comes up on my radar. Even if I hear more than one, you know, one person, it could just be an issue. And anytime a complaint is repeated to me, I have to take it seriously, like it could be representative of a larger problem.
Okay. Trustee Cannon, I know you're anxious to jump in here. I just want to finish Trustee McDermott's questions because he has a floor. But in the spirit of Trustee McDermott, what you were saying earlier and why this item is on the agenda, because every department is understaffed. My preference would not be to add a lot of additional unnecessary work to Leanne and her team's plate by having her send out letters, paper letters to every employee again. It seems to me to make sense to articulate to all the employees via an email that if you have lost your password or have not received it, that you can contact the pension fund office. If it's tons and tons of people, then we can revisit and they can send out new letters.
Does
that make sense to you?
That's fair. If it's more work to send out the letters than to answer the requests individually, I was of the opposite impression. So that's fine.
If I may.
We're almost there, Mr. Cannon. We're almost there, Mr. Cannon.
Thanks, Mayor.
And just the last thing, and then I'm done. Do we have an estimated date that we can expect, that our members can expect the updated pension numbers? Is that ready right now?
Or
are we still waiting on it?
Yeah, no. So again, thank you, Trustee McDermott. As I mentioned, we received the email from Dave and his group this morning. I think we have a better handle on it. I have asked IT to make this a priority as far as updating the last fiscal year pension numbers. We do need to look at a few of the calculations that the previous person did before he retired. But again, I made it a priority with our IT department. I think the information that David and his team sent over this morning was very helpful. And, you know, I need to talk to our IT director and the person he assigned to this. I will try to talk to them tomorrow to figure out the timeline of when we can download the information and get what Dave sent in his email this morning. So I don't have an exact timeline, but I do want to assure this trustee board I have made it a priority with IT.
Any ballpark idea or?
Based on the email that Dave sent, I'm going to say it may take us a week to get the information that he needs. And then as Leanna said, they have their own process, which Dave can correct me if I'm wrong, may take up to like 2 weeks to update the portal or so. But I'm going to try to get the information to Hooker and Holcomb within the next week if possible.
And David, do you want to respond about how much time it might take you to process the information once you receive it?
Yes, I'll tell you 2 weeks just to be conservative, but it should be 1 week. I'll just mention if the data is inaccurate and we have to go back, it may take longer. Well, let's just say we get an Excel file with all the information and we take a week to review it, make sure everything looks good. We bring it to the portal. 1 week is realistic. And then 2 weeks just to be conservative and add some cushion in case something goes wrong.
Okay. Thank you. Trustee Cannon has his hand up, and then I'll go to Trustee Ribeiro.
No, I'll defer to Trustee Ribeiro. I want to hear what she has to ask.
Okay. Trustee Ribeiro.
Yes, thank you. Just if you can just remind the trustees the cost for this, because I thought it was a very low cost, something like 10 cents the first time or something like that, but I could be mistaken.
Leanna?
Hi, Trustee Ribeiro. That is, we're going to get to that one. That one was what I discussed last week about the Northern Trust Portal, which is for retirees. That's something different. This is voted on, I don't know, might have even been 2 years, might have been before COVID. I can't even recall. I included the contract in there. David, can you touch on that, please?
Yes. So your current fees, which have been in place since 2019, you have a flat fee of everything that's not portal related, which is $10,750 a quarter or $43,000 a year. That covers all reports we do for you, valuations, GASB disclosures, COLA, annual report to employees, and just maintaining data, things like that. Then the portal fee is $6,500 a quarter or $26,000 a year. And that covers what we're discussing right now. Your participants have access to their data through our online database. They can make portal estimates of future calculations. And then all final retirement calculations are now being run through the portal. If you've requested one recently, you'll notice in the last year, the document you receive is very different than what it used to be. And those are all just flat fees, no matter how many requests we get. And again, that adds to all fees together, $17,250 a quarter or $69,000 a year. And that's what we would consider all inclusive. You're essentially just getting everything regardless of how much comes across our desk.
Not having a contract in front of me, my apologies, and I don't recall. Is there anything like in a contract that talks about like if the portal isn't working or if members can't have access or something that can be done? I don't know, money can be refunded or I don't know. It just seems like it's a lot of money. I think it sounds, I don't participate, but it sounds like it's a very good tool for those who need to use it, but if they're not able to use it and it's a lot of problems, there has to be something that can be done to make this better.
It is able to be used. There's no problem with the portal running. And David, doesn't the portal give estimations, assuming like a percentage of an increase or whatnot?
The portal can calculate your benefit based on any salary you input for the current year or future years. And I think what you're referring to is just, assume 2% increase per year. To go back to Trustee Ribeiro's question, if the portal wasn't working, yes, the fee would be removed on a quarterly basis until it is working. And that was actually the case in 2020. Part of this contract was new in 2019. It's got two parts, portal, non-portal. Portal took longer than expected up and running, and you wouldn't have been charged for that. So yes, if something is wrong, you're not going to be charged for it. That being said, I wanted to, not to change the conversation, but I'd like to acknowledge and address Trustee McDermott's comments. It does sound like people are having trouble logging in, which we don't want that to be the case. It does kind of make sense that if someone's new to using any software, maybe as something as simple as logging in for the first time is a big hurdle. But I do think once they get around that hurdle, logging in, remembering your credentials, your ID, the portal's up and running completely. Even if we don't currently have 2021, 2022 fiscal year earnings, an individual, if they knew them, could just input them anyway or just input any number they wanted to.
Yeah. My follow-up, so thank you for that. So with that being said though, so there's no help desk that they can call, because I know like a lot of times when I try to log in other sites for different things, if I'm having problems, I can call a help desk to that company specifically. But it sounds to me that if they're having problems, they have to call the pension office and not the help desk with the company. Is that correct?
That is correct. The terms of the contract are essentially they go to Leanna, not us. That being said, people have come to us. They're going to find our number somewhere. And as long as the volume is low, which it is, the people reaching out to us, we're happy to answer all their questions. We're not going to send them right back to Leanna. But our current contract says essentially if they need help, they go to Leanna and she can come to us, obviously.
So if there, I guess I'm just thinking in terms of like if there's like staffing problems at the pension office or something that they're not able to handle, why can't we just let members know to just contact help desk directly? I mean, even if they have to hold for an hour or something, I mean, that's the norm now for a lot of companies. That might be helpful to some members to just go directly to the source. Is that a possibility?
To come to us directly would technically, we'd probably have to revisit the fee would be my guess, but I can, you know, we can think about that. Like I said, if the volume's low enough, it's not a problem on our part at all. I think Leanna sends me an email or someone sends me an email less than once a month about portal login or something like that. But if you wanted them to have unlimited direct access to us, and unlimited means business hours, of course, but I believe that would be an additional, that would add to the fee that we're currently charging you. So that would be a different discussion from how I see it.
I just think that it's, I'm not saying we should go that route, but from what I'm hearing, just sort of being an outsider, not being involved in, you know, that process. But I think it's worth looking at because if it's a huge number of people that are having problems, I mean, if it's like a handful, mm-hmm. then that's different. But if it's a huge number of people, I think it's just worth looking into. And that's just, you know, my thoughts. Thank you for giving me this time.
Thank you, Trustee Ribeiro. And just in the spirit of one of your earlier questions, the portal is fully functioning, or the portal itself is fully functioning. The issue is that our IT department has not yet shared the updated information with Hooker and Holcomb to allow them to update some of the information on the portal. So it's our IT department that's working through the issue, not a Hooker and Holcomb issue or the portal issue. Trustee Cannon.
Mayor, can you hear me?
Yes.
Everybody else hear me?
I think so, yeah.
Everybody nod your head. Wasted service. Totally wasted. Mr. Ellicker, I've respected, I am not screaming. Can you hear me? I'm whispering low. Can everybody hear me? Wasted service. Do not tell me about the portal, Mr. David.
Mr. Cannon, I just want to remind you, you can share your comments in a respectful way.
I have the
floor. Share your comments in a respectful way.
I have, Mr. Mayor. Can you hear me? Wasted.
Mr. Cannon.
Wasted. Mayor, I'm going to speak. If you interrupt me again, we're going to have a problem.
Mr. Cannon, I am the chair. Mr. Cannon.
And I'm the vice
chair. Are you? And I am happy to give you the floor. If you are respectful to people, but I will not tolerate disparaging people on the meeting. Mr. Cannon, please do not threaten me or other members of the committee.
I'm just telling you, are you going to interrupt me?
Mr. Cannon, take a breath. And you can feel welcome to say respectful comments and share your opinion in a respectful way.
Oh, hey, is this respectful? The services that are provided by Hooker and Holcomb are not in question. Can I say that? So what I'm saying to you right now, I hope you can hear me. This is wasted service, hundreds and hundreds of members. The police union president is on there. President is on this meeting. I can't speak for him, but I can tell you that the police side of this has had multiple problems. I can tell you that the fire side has. This is wasted. If I have to raise my voice so you hear, this is a wasted service. If that's disrespectful for me pointing that out, I apologize. I'm going to keep this at a point right now. This is not Hooker and Holcomb's problem. Once they provide the service, it's great. We pay, Mr. Mengel, I am going to bring you this. We pay $43,000, because I can get a straight answer for you. $43,000, sir, you just quoted, per year?
That's non-portal fees. Portal fees is $26,000 a year.
What is the total then?
$69,000 per year.
$69,000. And I was opposed. This has nothing to do with you. This goes back to the Mayor Harp administration. I was opposed because at that current time, which was several years ago, the whole world is not as everybody thinks it should be. Nobody is totally up to date with this online portal stuff. It's great. It sounds in theory unbelievable. But the reality of it is, if one person doesn't input a number, the whole system is useless because a member can't get what they need. If you're going to blame the member because they don't have the password, which is incorrect, but if you're going to blame them, is totally wrong. We're paying $69,000. Who's paying that? If the pension is paying that, comes out of our funds. Guess what? That's the taxpayers indirectly. That's the firemen and policemen's contributions going to us, a portal that the portal in theory is great. This is not about Hooker and Holcomb. This is about, and I am sorry to insult anyone that feels insulted. And the mayor's, Mayor, you want to jump in now before I get going? If anybody else is insulted, I apologize. But Mayor, this is wasted services, wasted money, whether it comes directly, which it doesn't come directly from the pension fund, because you say you pass it on through the budget, through our fees. This is wasted, totally wasted, because our members can't access it. They can't get it, and they can't get an updated number. When it doesn't come in updated number, if I told you, Mayor, your numbers are such and such, but when you go to retire, they're actually this because the portal wasn't updated. Guess who's wasting money? We are. There's no press on this. I don't think, oh, Garchung is on this, and somebody else from the press is here. No independent, no Hidden Register. So I am telling you right now, if somebody doesn't get involved, if this board doesn't wake up, $69,000, which is really not much when we're dealing with $400 million if you're pulling it out of there. This is, Mayor, remember this, wasted, wasted money. I said it under the Harp administration. I'm saying it now. Wasted money because it doesn't work. Hooker and Holcomb, great in theory. You guys do a great job. This is somewhere. I'm not going to go back and point fingers because I know everyone will get mad at me. Cannon's acting up again. Wasted money. I'm tired of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cannon. Just to be clear, nobody was blaming any member for not being able to access the portal. Mr. McDermott had raised this as some members had some difficulties accessing the portal, and the discussion was about how to facilitate members accessing the portal. So nobody's blaming any member of any employee for not accessing the portal or for the issues here. Are there any other comments from the trustees?
Trustee Cannon. I would like to reconsider.
Trustee Cannon, go ahead.
I would like to reconsider this contract. I believe in theory, but in actuality, if you're going to tell me what's today's date, Mayor, I don't even know. I'm so delusional. What's today's date, Mayor?
It's the 29th of September, Mr. Cannon.
What's the end of the fiscal, Mayor?
It's the 30th of June.
Okay. How many months ago was that?
Mr. Cannon.
Mayor? Answer the question.
No, this is not an inquisition. No, Mr. Cannon. Feel free to make your point.
Wasted money. There's 3 months that nobody's been able to access because nothing's been updated. Wasted money, Mayor. You want to go deeper on this? Go look at the departments that are understaffed, IT, pension, anyone else. I'm not going to name every department. We're not going to go there. The problem is it's wasted money. Please review the whole program at this time. Mr. Mendel, can we, whoever has the knowledge of this, can we suspend this program right now? Or are we paying for it no matter what? Are we under contract?
You are under contract, but you've been our client for so long that I'm sure we're willing to hear any of your requests, honestly. But I just like to touch on a few things. One, thank you for sharing your concerns, Trustee Cannon and Trustee McDermott. I'm going to echo what Leanna said. We actually were totally unaware of any of those. And now that we're hearing them, we'd love to help in any way possible. But the $69,000 you're talking about, portal estimates is probably less than $5,000 of that. So the portal is set up also for final retirement calculations, which are running 100% regardless of the lack of data. And then all the reports we do for you, things like calculating the contribution in the valuation report, the disclosures, that's all baked into the $69,000 also.
No, Mr. Mendel.
Mr. Cannon, let Mr. Mendel finish answering and commenting on your comments.
Mayor, you're correct.
Mr. Cannon, let's run an organized meeting here. Okay, we're going to run an organized meeting. I have never been reluctant to allow you to speak as long as you want. We can stay here until 5 p.m. tonight. but we have to be respectful, and we have to, just like I let you finish your lengthy statements, I'm going to let Mr. Mendel finish his lengthy explanation, because it's important for us to get down to the bottom of the information in a respectful way. Mr. Mendel.
Thank you, Mayor Elker. I think I was done with my comment, but I don't mind Trustee Cannon, expressing himself here. It's good to hear these comments. So, Trustee Cannon, feel free to speak further.
I don't think anyone minds Trustee Cannon. Mr. Cannon, I am the chair. I am the chair.
Can I request a point of order? Can I please request a point of order?
Trustee Rivera has a point of order.
Yeah. So this is going off the rails from my perspective. And just as a trustee on this board, I'm just going to just ask if we can just allow speakers to speak and just move on, because we are actually going on this point much longer than we probably should. And we have a lengthy agenda. So I'm just going to request a point of order on that matter. Thank you, Trustee Rivera.
Mr. Cannon, do you have an additional comment?
Mr. Mendel, your program, in theory, is perfect. We appreciate your being here, and I appreciate all the insight that you give us. It is not on Hooker and Holcomb's portal's responsibility for the input. And you do, once anything is inputted, there is a system in place where I think that you will input a number based on how the portal works, where you average 4 years. There is an automatic number inputted. However, and Mr. Mendel, I'm just making this point for the rest of the board so they understand this. This is not Hooker and Holcomb's issue, because you guys will provide a number. You will provide based on 4 year average. However, the updated information coming from the city side is not there. And I apologize to the rest of this board if I have taken too long to relay all the frustrations of my 300 members, and I believe there's close to 300 to 400 police members. I know they're down about 90, but there's 300 to 400 members there. And I can tell you personally, I am the union president of the fire department. Mr. McDermott is a trustee on this board, but he's not the first point of contact when it comes to union. And for him, on the very end of the union side, to get this contact information, there is multiple frustration coming from both the police and fire. For $69,000, this is, Mayor, you got this? Put your ears up. Wasted money. Not your fault, Mayor. I'm going to put this back to the Harp administration. I don't need to rehash it, other than we need, as fiduciary responsibility, make sure that's noted in the minutes, fiduciary responsibility to watch the expenses of this fund. Okay, so let's revisit. It's not Hooker and Holcomb's problem. This is a problem with the city of New Haven. This is a problem. 69,000. Thank you, Evelise, for your point of order. We're going to move on from this. My point has been put out there. I hope everybody, Mayor, you listen. Mayor, can you hear me? Mayor.
Mr. Cannon, are you done with your point?
Mayor, can you hear me? Do I have an audio problem going right now? Mayor, can you hear me?
Mr. Cannon, everyone can hear you.
Wasted money.
Okay.
Thank you.
Are there any other comments on item D? Okay, moving on to item three, there may be some overlap here. Discussion of the benefit payment portal for pension participants continued. Any comments from staff on this one?
Hi, this is Leanna. We brought it up at last month's meeting. I just was touching on it a little bit more. SURF to approve this. This has nothing to do with Hooker and Holcomb. This is through Northern Trust, which handles the actual retirements payments, monthly payments, and they have a benefit portal where users can go on and create an account and make their own changes, such as when they move, they can do an address change. If they're, get a new bank account, they could change their direct deposit, they could change their tax withholdings. They would be able to view their, monthly statements instead of them being mailed. And I believe also their 1099s when the time comes annually. That is what Evelise kind of mentioned a little earlier. The cost was around, to get it going, $1 per participant. I want to say there's around 2,200 participants. And that would just include the setup and, you know, sending a letter out to every retiree. Then from there on, it should be around 10 cents per participant annually. Build, I want to say they said around March, and that's just to keep it up and running. And additional information to add on it, which I mentioned at the SURF meeting, was that when it first is implemented, in order to set up the account, the participant will have to verify themselves. They would have to match what is on file for their social, their name, their zip code, how much they were paid last, et cetera. And then the participant creates a unique username and password for that account. They have to answer 6 security questions during the initial setup. And then before making any changes on their account in the future, they will then have to either answer 2 of those security questions correctly or enter a code that's sent to their cell phone. So this was just a follow-up as measures that are taken to make sure that no one else logs into someone's account to make a request that wasn't of them. This would not eliminate someone from contacting my office and saying, hey, I need to update this or I need to change my address. This is just another option for retirees, because we've gotten a lot of requests in our office of retirees asking if there was a way for them to go online to get their information or make their changes themselves. So we looked into it, and this is what Northern Trust came back with. SURF just approved it at their meeting, so we put it on the PNF agenda to see if this is something that the trustees would like for, once again, not active employees, nothing through Hooker and Holcomb. This is through Northern Trust for retirees.
Thank you, Leanna. Other questions on this second portal?
More portals are we going to have?
Mr. Cannon, you have a question?
Can you hear me, Mayor? Mayor, can you hear me?
Mr. Cannon, we all can hear you.
How many portals are we going to have? We're going to add a third, a fourth, fifth. If it's broken, if it's not working, we're wasting money. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cannon. Are there any other questions for Leanna? Leanna, are you looking for us to vote in support of the portal or adopt the portal or any action on our side here?
Yeah, if the trustees are interested, again, SURF approved it. So we're going to move forward to allowing this, creating this portal opportunity for SURF retirees. We would need a vote on it if PNF also would like this for the PNF retirees. I mean, just throwing it out there, to be honest, we actually get more inquiries from the PNF retiree side for this recently than SURF, but it's entirely up to the trustees if this is or is not something that they want to offer.
And currently, retirees, in order to get updated information on their benefits, have to call your office, is that?
So they're, even if they have direct deposit, they're mailed, once again, their monthly stubs, right. Whether or not it, you know, it's delayed because of the mail or they lose it or they move. But yes, to update any change of address, direct deposit, tax withholding, they can contact us. They can contact Northern Trust directly. And then also the 1099s get mailed out. But this is just, once again, if they want to have a quicker source, you know, an online source to see how much their monthly stubs were instead of waiting for it to come in the mail, or if they're making a quick direct deposit change because of, you know, their bank was hacked or something like that. I mean, yes, they can still email us. We will then email them the form. They would have to fill out the form and email it back to us, or they would be able to just log on themselves and update it right away.
Okay. All right. Are there opinions on it from the trustees on whether to adopt this proposed portal to improve convenience for the retirees? Mr. Cannon, I saw your hand up.
Yeah, Mayor, I, at this time, I just honestly don't think this is, I'm blown away that we're not going to do this right now. I can tell you right now that we are in a problem with the previous portal, not Hooker and Holcomb. This is a breakdown in the internal system of the city of New Haven. And I'm not pointing fingers, but I'm going to tell you right now, to add to this fund or add to the city's expense for this matter is not acceptable. So I would understand if you think it's going to, in theory, tell the board that this is going to make efficiency happen. It's not. It's going to be wasted money again. Northern Trust does a great job. Hooker and Holcomb does a great job. This is not a problem with either of those services, but we do not, and I can tell you from 330 members of the fire department, I have confirmation from the police union president, 400 members close to that over there. This is a problem. Nobody is happy with it. You will not even get through to the office, Leanna, no disrespect. You'll not get through for a day. You'll email
me. I'm sorry. You're not going to so
just
my Leanna, office. Leanna, Leanna. Here. I am a trustee.
Hey, wait, folks. So Mr. Cannon has the floor, and I'm happy to have Leanna respond. But Mr. Cannon, finish your statement. And please do not, folks, raise your voice here.
Mayor, do I have the floor?
Mr. Cannon, you have the floor.
Thank you. At this time, I would like to not even entertain until we get a clarity of the previous portal that is up and running, but not efficiently providing numbers that need to be on point, not due to Hooker and Holcomb, but I would not entertain another portal at this time with cost to this directly to this pension. If the city of New Haven wants to adapt this new expense to provide for the members, employees of the job, whether SERP accepted it and you want to provide it for PNF, I can understand that. But at this time, I don't think we need to draw on the expenses, especially in this current market, which we haven't even got to how bad this market is. Right now, draw on expenses, draw on this fund. So I would entertain maybe possibly moving this to a future discussion. But at this time right now, we don't need to go into entertaining another expense from this fund. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cannon. And you know, just to be clear, I think from time to time, there's accusations made of the pension fund staff not responding to people, not getting back to people. And each time those accusations have been unfounded. I know that Leanna and her staff work very, very hard to respond to people as quickly as possible and will continue to do so. Are there any other comments on the portal that is being proposed here from other trustees?
To keep it brief, I don't see the sense in getting started with a new portal when there's the acknowledged problems of the existing one. I realize they're two different things, but if we can get the issues resolved with the one we already have, we can entertain going on for another one. And until that's up and running to where the membership is satisfied with it, I can't justify the expense.
Other comments from folks here? My own opinion is this is an added benefit to the retirees. It's a whole separate portal. It is not very expensive, as Leanna outlined. It would be unfortunate for the retirees themselves not to have this option. But if the trustees feel strongly either way, you know, at the end of the day, it's the trustees' opinion here. So it sounds like that at least two members feel strongly that we shouldn't adopt the portal now. Other trustees have any comments? And if not, we can just move on. Seeing none, let's move on to item E, discussion on benefit payment. Oh, I'm sorry. Item F, discussion on virtual versus hybrid in-person meetings. And I understand this was discussed briefly at the last meeting as well. Any comments on this? Trustee Cannon.
Trustee Cannon would like to go back to at least a possible hybrid, partial in person, and for any member that can't actually make it due to circumstances of their schedule conflicts, to have the access to the Zoom. But I do want to come back to reality. I know COVID has set us apart, but I'd like to come back to what's in the guidelines that we have to provide an in-person meeting for these pension issues.
Thank you, Trustee Cannon. My opinion here is that the way that we are doing things now on virtual is going well, other than Trustee Cannon Can's concerns, and he's been very good at being able to log on himself to this meeting. I've heard no requests for moving to hybrid. It takes a lot of additional work from staff to do so. And my own preference is to continue on Zoom unless there are other people that feel very strongly and are unable to access the meetings. But you know, ultimately, of course, this is up to the trustees to make a decision. Do other trustees have any opinions here? Trustee Ribeiro.
Yeah, I just have a question. So if we did decide to go hybrid, that would mean that at least one trustee would have to be in the office. I'm sorry. Yes, in City Hall.
Correct. So basically, we went hybrid before, and I would be at City Hall with multiple staff members and Mr. Cannon in the mayor's conference room to go hybrid. Mr. Cannon, Trustee Ribeiro has the floor.
Do we actually have to, you know, make a decision to do that, or can we just periodically do that if we want to? To make an actual decision.
Attorney Cohn?
Yes, and you need to make that decision. You can go back and change your mind, but you'd have to vote to do it.
So if we say hybrid, means we have to do it. We can't say we're going to do hybrid in the next month, decide not to do it without going back. I'm just procedurally trying to understand.
Correct. I mean, you could decide the next month. You can do it month by month, but you can't in advance say we're going to do some hybrid,
Well, from my perspective, I mean, I would support whatever the trustees decide, but for me, the Zoom works better because of my work hours. But if we were to go hybrid, if I was able to physically come down there, I would try, but it would definitely not be on a consistent basis. But of course, I will support the will of the board.
Thank you, Trustee Ribeiro. Other comments here?
Perfectly fine with staying on Zoom.
Trustee Morrow, thank you. I see Trustee Cannon raising his hand.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I believe it is somewhere in some kind of bylaw or something that we do need to provide this in-person access to this board. Carolyn, I'm not sure bylaw. There's somewhere that we have to provide this, whether it's in the city, language somewhere in the charter or something like that, but there needs to be, I realize that members can't make it. I am not trying to hold everybody in the in-person meeting, but I would love to have access to City Hall to sit next to Mayor Ellicker in these meetings with staff. And that's where I'd like to, and there's no problem with the Zoom if anybody can't make it. And I appreciate everybody's efforts to be here, whether it's on phone or whether it's in Zoom. I appreciate that. But the meetings in person, we've come out of COVID. I know that the City Hall has entertained Board of Alders meetings with hundreds of people in the room. So the COVID is not an issue. We've gotten away from it. I appreciate everyone that's here. But if you can't make the meeting, understood. The Zoom, we've done it before. But the in-person is something that needs, I'd like to be in that room. Conference room or wherever the mayor designates. We can sit out in the green if he likes.
Thank you, Trustee Cannon. I see Trustee Avery.
I support a hybrid, going hybrid. I think for me, it would be helpful. It gives me more insight and more contact with the trustees to have more dialogue. I would really appreciate a hybrid, and I support that.
Okay. Other comments from trustees? Any other comments here?
I'd like to make a motion to go back to hybrid, in person, and accessible by Zoom and phone. Motion made.
Is there a second? Trustee Cannon made the motion. Is there a second?
I'll second for the sake of moving the item forward.
Trustee Ribeiro, second the item. Any discussion on the item or additional discussion on this item? Okay. All those in favor of going back to hybrid meetings, Trustee Cannon?
Aye.
Trustee Ribeiro?
Aye.
Trustee Vereen?
Aye.
Trustee McDermott?
Aye.
Trustee Morrow?
Nope.
And I am a no. So the item passes. We'll go back to hybrid. See you all next month in person, or some of you all next month in person. Item 4, age annuity retirement and service-connected disability. There are 5 people, Sean Reynolds, Richard Green, David Vargas, Richard LaRocque, William Gambardella. Is there a question from the trustees that would require us to go into executive session for these items? Okay, is there a motion?
Motion to approve disability pensions for the above listed.
All right, there's a motion for Mr. Cannon. Is there a second?
Second.
Second from Mr. McDermott. Any discussion on these 5 individuals? Any discussion? All those in favor, Trustee Cannon?
Aye.
Trustee McDermott?
Aye.
Trustee Ribeiro?
Aye.
Trustee Vereen?
Aye.
Trustee Morrow?
Aye.
And I am an aye. That item passes. Moving on to item 5, death of retirement information only for the passing of Mr. Salvatore Gargano. If we could have a moment of silence, please, for the passing and reflection on Mr. Gargano. Thank you. Item 6, payment of the bills. Is there a motion to approve payment of the bills?
I move that we approve the bills.
Second.
Trustee Ribeiro made the motion. Trustee McDermott seconded. Any discussion on payment of the bills? Any discussion? Seeing none, all is in favor of approving paying the bills. Trustee Ribeiro?
Aye.
Trustee McDermott?
Aye.
Trustee Vereen?
Aye.
Trustee Morrow?
Aye.
Trustee Cannon?
Aye.
And I am an aye as well. Item 7, any old business? Item 8, any new business? All right, moving on to the investment report, item A. I'll turn it over to Raymond James.
Hi, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good to see you. Taylor, can you put up the report, please? Leanna, I can get to it. Oh, yeah, that one, that's great. Thank you very much. Okay, so we're talking about a month ago, and things have gotten worse since then. So I'm gonna go through this report fairly briefly, give some market commentary, and then next month will be an interesting meeting also. So if you look at the top line of the report, you have a market value of the pension at $322 million as of August 31st. If I did my calculations right, you'd probably see the portfolio right now about $315 versus 322, so it's been a challenge. If you look over to the 3-year number, however, 790 is above our discount rate of 7.25. So we had a really good year during the COVID situation, and we've had a tough run since then. So averaged out, doing okay. One of the points I'll make on this report is that active management has been challenged this year. So active would be, you know, individual money managers that are buying and selling securities with their discretion versus passive management, which would be an index. So go down to the equity managers, Sizer, Atalanta, and Aristotle, you're going to see a similar theme. All been challenged year to date. The long-term numbers are okay. But again, it's been a challenging market to keep up with. And we'll see again, this past month has been even more so. If you go to the mid-cap managers, we have Cook & Bieler, Mutual of USA. Cook & Bieler, for both the mid-cap and the small-cap portfolios, has been on watch. So the mid-cap portfolio has been very challenging. As you can see, it's $24 million across the board, except for since inception, they're struggling. So been in touch with them, and we're continuing to watch both portfolios. But as of right now, what I would recommend to the board would be to take from their mid-cap portfolio, bring it down to take about $10 million from there, $24 million. We need it as a source of funds to fund the new manager, but I'll talk about when we get to the fixed income. So we're not going to fire them, but we should. I think we should penalize them by taking some money from them and using it towards funding right now, since we're getting a little bit tight with cash until the ARC comes in. So that would be something that I'd recommend. I don't know if it needs to be put to the vote. I don't think it does, but that's up to Carolyn. I'll bring that back up at the end of the meeting. Look down to small cap with Clearbridge, again, challenged environment, good long-term numbers, and Cook and Beeler, again, is challenged on the small cap side also, so continue to watch them. Move to the next page, which is Channing on the small cap side. Decent numbers in the long run, but again, a very challenged manager in the 3 and 6 month time frame. International, WCM and MFS. A little bit struggling here in the month and the 3 month numbers, but across the board, fairly in line. The 3 year number on WCM is coming back a little bit, but we've talked to them. We'll keep an eye on them. One thing to add is that we put $15 million into a new manager there, Exponents, which took a long time to get up and running, but that will balance out our international equity managers. So we'll have three now, and you'll see that in the next report. Went on to fixed income. Don't need to comment on that. They're all pretty much in line. It's been a tough environment for bonds, as we know. Rates have gone up expeditiously in the last couple months. Fed funds rate, which is controlled by the Federal Reserve, has gone from 0.25% a year ago to 3.25% in 1 year. So very rapid movement by the Federal Reserve, putting pressure on fixed income. So we have a combination of really tough stock market and a very difficult fixed income market. So it's been rough with that. Over to the following page, which is alternatives. You can see that Alcyon, we also brought in, had a good month, 5% versus down 3. That's a good thing. And actually, if you can go to page 9.
Hold by your behavior, actually.
I don't know if Taylor heard me, but page 9 would be for asset allocation. Sort of bring you up to speed is where we are. Actually, one more page, I think. Sorry. One more. Okay, so this is our asset allocation. Goes back to our investment policy statement, which you know we follow very closely, and then we try to get our asset allocation within there. We do have the ability to go outside of those realms based on market conditions, based on market movement, and based on funding. So if you look there, we have a couple no's on that column, on the column to the right. However, we'll be back in line within the next report or two. Now, U.S. Equity International will be in range because we just gave money to Exponents, so that will be a fix to that. Real estate's out of range only because it's done so well. We do have a manager in there, Intercontinental, that's got about $16 million, which is a liquid investment versus most everything else we own in real estate is a long-term private equity or private real estate investment. So we need a source of funds, or we need to get the IPS back into range with real estate. We'll look to them. But right now, it's something that's done well, and we'll keep it the way it is for now. With that, I know it's been a long morning, so I'll just go into, I'm not even going to bring up the market commentary. I'm just going to talk about a couple of things that are going on, and I'll let you guys go on your day. So I've been doing this for over 25 years. I would say that this is probably one of the most challenging markets I've ever seen. Just a brutal market in bonds, brutal market in equities. So we're challenged here. Do I think that the world's coming to an end now? And do I think that at the end of our fiscal year, we'll be all right? Yes, I think it actually will be. But in the near term, it's a challenge. There are a couple of things going on. So there's a term in our business called equity risk premium. And so what that is that what are you getting paid to take the risk of buying a stock versus buying a bond? Well, if you look at it, if you look at the markets a year ago or 2 years ago, interest rates were at, you know, basically zero. So you were buying a bond with a 1% yield or 1% coupon, and you'd say, well, that's not going to get it done. So I'm going to take the risk of going out and buying equities because it's worth the risk. Well, now you have a situation where bonds are paying 3 or 4% that are guaranteed. And you're saying, well, if I can get 3 or 4% in the fixed income market, why would I take the risk to go out there and buy equities given the situation with fixed income. So it's putting pressure on stocks. Stocks are considered a long duration type investment, a 30-year treasury, so it's very sensitive to rising interest rates. So something that we're looking at, we'll continue to look at the asset allocation and figure out where it's appropriate to add risk or to de-risk the portfolio. You know, the Federal Reserve going back to bonds and rates, you know, they're not done yet. You know, Fed funds raised 3.25. They're looking to raise it again between now and the end of the year, probably another 2 times. But I think they'll be done after that. So probably discount rate up to up to about 4.25, maybe 4.5 at the worst case scenario. So that's what's going on there. And then lastly, something that's been a global phenomenon is that the US dollar is at a pretty much an all-time high in the last 30 years. And it's putting a lot of pressure on a lot of different markets, including obviously currencies with overseas. We've been reading about the British pound and the euro, which are at historic rates. And it's also hurting, you know, multinationals. So people in our country that sell abroad, it hurts them. And it puts a lot of pressure on international trade, which is dominated in US dollars when it comes to settlement. So if you look back at history, and I read an interesting quote from Morgan Stanley the other day, and it talks about the dollar being as strong as it is. And their comment was, it usually leads to some type of financial or economic crisis. And if there was ever a time for something to break, this would be it. So you look at, for example, England yesterday, they have a situation where they had to basically step in, the Bank of England step in and start buying bonds because they're worried about, you know, basically stabilization in their marketplace. They're doing a couple of things on the fiscal side, which aren't really making sense on the monetary side because they're going back and forth against each other. So that's a challenge there. So you have a lot of problems out there, and you have a lot of situations that are, you know, that haven't happened in the last 30 years. So we're trying to work our way through it. The good news is that we're coming into a time in the portfolio where we're getting an infusion of cash, which is good. I know the arc's coming. Not sure exactly when, but I know it's probably coming to now and the end of the year. So that's a good thing. We'll get that money in. I think going into the first quarter of next year, definitely for the second quarter, it'll be a great time to be deploying assets, cash into the portfolio. Probably keep the portfolio we have right now. I'm not going to be looking to add new managers unless we need to. But for now, we'll take that money in, dollar cost average into the portfolio, stay fully invested. We'll be out of line with our IPS because we'll be heavy in cash. But as we deploy that, we'll get back in line. So stay invested, buy on dips, which we can do right now going into the end of the year. And I think that, again, all of this inflationary data will start to ease. I think the Fed's doing their best to kind of slow things down. They might be going a little bit farther than they should. Time will tell on that. But I think a year from now, we'll be in a better spot, probably looking more like 2019 to early 2020, which is where we are right now. So with that, I'm going to have any questions.
Thanks, Dave. Silbrain. Any questions from trustees? I see Mr. Cannon's hand up.
Mr. Moran, appreciate the work you do. It's very, very, very depressing what's going on with the market right now, and we're all riding it. You had started your presentation with a recommendation. I unfortunately had to step out of the room for a moment. What was that recommendation?
So Cook & Beeler is an equity manager in both the mid-cap and small-cap portfolios that we have. They've been challenged as of late. They've been a good manager and been with the fund for, I would say, a decade. Not both portfolios, but I know that the small cap portfolio has been around for a long time. They've been challenged lately. You know, we've talked to them. Things might turn with them because they were, you know, very light in energy. You know, they mentioned that, which hurt them. Obviously, everything energy related, the shares went straight up. So maybe that turns now. We've seen a little softening in oil. But on the mid cap side, I would recommend taking $10 million from their $24 million. So we're not terminating them, but we are penalizing them based on performance. And we need it right now for a couple of different things, but most imminently, we need it for the funding of a fixed income manager that presented to us about 2 months ago. And we voted to give them $7.5 million. So I want to take that $10 and give $7.5 of it to Ceritas, which is a fixed income manager, which will round out our portfolio in that category. So that's my recommendation on that.
Mr. Moran, I think at the end of the previous presentation, you alluded to money coming in for the ARC, ADAC, and having that cash on hand while the market's low. Is that what you had said also, I'd stepped out of the room for a moment.
Yeah, the timing's good. You know, the money's coming in, obviously, between now and the end of the year, unless I'm mistaken, and it'll be a good time to be deploying that over the next, you know, 3 to 6 months, based on the fact that the market's down. We'll dollar cost average into the portfolio based on our IPS and our current asset allocation.
We had vowed years ago to start cleaning up some of these old legacy accounts that have been around for a long time that really didn't make movement. They were from prior administrations. It's a complete board. I think I'm the longest on the board, besides the attorney that's sitting in with us, and she can verify that also. She's been here and I have been here the longest. I believe that you're asking for $10 million to be removed from this 24. Would there be harm in asking for the full 24 to be removed from this company and then holding the cash? The market would be in a position where if we could redeploy it down the road, we may be able to optimize some return on that. Is that something you might consider?
It's something that I'll take a look at. My concern is this. I think we might be at, I'm not positive about this. Obviously, I'm not positive about anything. I'm just giving you my best judgment. I'd be remiss to take all of it from there because I think there's opportunity to stay fully invested, not fully invested, but to stay invested in the mid-cap space. But to your point, I'll make a point of it to reach out again and get a little more detail as to what's going on with them and what their reasoning is as to why they're still positioned the way they are. And I'll get back to you in the next 30 days. But for now, my recommendation would be to take the 10, keep them on watch. And if we could have a further discussion in the next month or two, we could move in a different direction. They do have two portfolios. They have a substantial amount of money with us. And there's no reason to take a deeper dive on that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Other questions?
Do I need a... sorry, Mr. Mayor, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yep. Hang on, Dave, and see if there's other questions, and then it sounds like you're looking for us to approve the your proposal. Mr. McDermott, I saw you on mute.
Yeah, I just, you know, want to add that I do support moving some of the funds. These charts here, you know, not only are these funds underperforming their indexes, they're underperforming the index. You know, when we look at the fees and all that we pay for professional money management, the goal is to actually to outperform the index and to do so to the point that it justifies the additional fees. When these funds are lagging that far behind, I think it makes sense to make that move. I understand not wanting to pull out entirely just to keep some exposure to the sector. In the event that, you know, we could witness the majority of the rebound, which will come eventually while our money's on the sideline. And I know that would certainly be adverse for the interest of the fund. But I do support this. And I mean, I look at the numbers and this is, they're not cutting it.
Yeah. So to that point, if I can, I am not adverse to using indexing and passive investments side by side with some of these active managers. It's been a tough environment, but I'm not making excuses for anybody, nor do I have a personal preference in the big picture. I think it's here to make as much money as we can with the appropriate amount of risk. So with that infusion of money, we could take a look at, I know we do that on a daily basis, but probably a weekly basis, monthly basis. We'll take a look at in the indexing versus active management. Obviously, there's a cost savings there. And in an environment like this, if these managers can't outperform, you know, what we hired them to do, then we'll put passive indexing right next to them and we'll judge it based on that. It's a lot easier to deploy that way. Trust McDermott. So, you know, I can walk into the next meeting or two and that R comes in and says, hey, we're going to buy the Russell 1000. We're going to buy the S&P 500. We're not going to sit here and do, you know, interviews. We're not going to have managers come in and search three different managers and all that. I don't think anyone wants to sit through me comparing three different index funds from Vanguard, Fidelity, and someone else. It's pretty straightforward stuff, right? So I have no problem taking that money and deploying it into, you know, the asset allocation on the passive side, the indexing side, and running it side by side with these managers and seeing, you know, who's actually cutting it or not. And we give them a full market cycle, which is multiple years, but in an environment like this, there's no reason to, you know, put it right against them and say, hey, you're hired and paid good money to beat these indices. Let's see how you're doing. So I'm not opposed to that.
Other questions from the trustees on the investment report? So Dave, can you articulate what you're asking us to do again?
Sure. So we're going to take from the Cook and Beeler mid-cap equity portfolio $10 million.
And put that?
We're going to put that into the cash account right now. And then we're going to take 7.5 of the $10 million and give it to Ceritas, which is a new fixed income manager that we hired about 3 months ago.
Okay. Is there a motion to reflect that? Mr. Cannon.
So moved. Motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
So Mr. Cannon made the motion. Mr. McDermott made the second. Any discussion? All those in favor, Mr. Cannon?
Aye.
Mr. McDermott?
Aye.
Trustee Morrow?
Aye.
Trustee Ribeiro?
Aye.
Trustee Vereen? You're on mute, Trustee Vereen.
I think she said she had to step away. She put it in the chat.
Okay. And I am an aye as well. That motion passes. Are there any other things on the investment report? Okay. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Trustee Rivera made the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee McDermott made the second. All those in favor, Trustee Ribeiro?
Aye.
Trustee McDermott?
Aye.
Trustee Cannon?
Is there a discussion, Mayor?
Good point. Is there any discussion on the motion to adjourn? Mr. Cannon?
Mayor, I'll see you next month. Coffee, 2 cream, please.
Trustee Ribeiro is an aye. Trustee McDermott is an aye. Trustee Cannon?
Aye.
Trustee Morrow?
Aye.
Trustee Vereen, going once, going twice for Trustee Vereen, and I'm an aye as well. Meeting's adjourned. Good to see everybody. See you all soon.
Have a great day.